CJ Barasevic is joining us this morning. It's good to see you in person.
Likewise, it's great to be here. It really is.
It's one thing to see you on TV. It's another to see you in person.
It's good to see you, too.
And I know that you're going to be busy today, too, because when I was looking at your agenda for today, you're going to be heading out to the Boys and Girls Club today, and you're going to Kincaid Reed's Creek Conservancy District, too. So you got two stops.
We will be in Southern Illinois all day today. It should be a good day. Meet a lot of voters.
What's the deal with the Boys and Girls Club?
Well, we just want to talk to folks about the issues that are important to Southern Illinois, meet as many people as we can, shake a few hands. They do great work, so I really look forward to it.
All right, and this is a discussion at 4:30, so you're running to meet people there too.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, so keep that in mind. Because, you know, with you being the Democratic candidate, a big congressional district, you had to ramp up. You had to get out there and get done. I know you've done fundraising. As a matter of fact, I think the last number I saw that you had, your campaign had fundraised boss campaign.
We did have a quarter where we outraised the congressman. We've got a lot of support. Most of our financial support has been from donors in the district, people that live in the 12th congressional district, people who are excited about our candidacy. My opponent has raised almost half of his money from what we call dark money, from PACs and super PACs and so forth, people that don't really have an interest in the district, folks that are financing a vote instead of the 12th congressional district.
I've always noticed that when you go out and you campaign the first time around, there's something about the perspective that when you step into that role, that your perception changes, the doors open, and you start learning things that you didn't know early on, long before you ever take office and the election goes. The campaigning process is a learning process too. So what have you learned that you did not know when you decided to run?
You know, I think what's been most important and frankly most rewarding about this process is how interested people are in the political process. You know, I'm running for a job that will influence the lives of just about everybody in the district, and people know that, and they're concerned, and they want their issues to be heard. They look forward to talking to folks that are running for that position, for any position, frankly, and they want to be active, and it's rewarding. You know, we see at a national level how spite-filled and hateful the process can be, but really locally, people are enthusiastic and excited about the process because I think they know that they've got candidates that have their best interests at heart.
And divining that to figure out who's the person who has the interest that you want to take to Washington, because there are big points of view and they are 180 diametrically opposed views. We are polarized right now in this country. And as you said, nasty. But that polarization means that we're so far apart, compromise is harder. Because you talked about how it affects the people in your district. It could affect somebody in Mosul.
That's right.
I mean, this job has a lot of tendrils that go out. National security, immigration, health care, the national debt, trade policy. And right. That's just the ones that I scraped off the top of my rather small brain.
Well, that's correct. I mean, you know, one of the most important things that we can do is take ideas and policy positions that I'm passionate about and talk to voters about that. It helps mold the process as to how we get to know people, but also, and more importantly, it helps voters get to know me. We've been able, I think, to separate my candidacy from my opponents in that I think we're the most viable alternative. My candidacy represents the best process for Southern Illinois moving forward. Not a career politician. I pay a mortgage. I have student loan debt. SIU's my alma mater. You know, I appreciate and have personal experiences of a lot of the things that folks go through. My opponent's been in elected office since the early 1990s, and frankly, he's been representative of a system that appears to be broken. The state of Illinois isn't moving forward. He didn't bring a whole lot back to the district. And frankly, in Washington, D.C., he's an extremely partisan voice. He votes with party leadership more than any other member of the Illinois delegation, and that's not good for Southern Illinois.
Illinois, as its as effect from Washington, last Friday, the Illinois Department of Insurance announced these formal figures. The silver cost, the silver package, the low-cost individual plan, 45% increase. Blue Cross Blue Shield individual plan that currently covers 350,000 people, a 51% increase. They talk about double digits because it diminishes this. It's not. It's 47 and 51% increases for individuals in the state of Illinois. The Affordable Care Act is no longer affordable.
You're absolutely right. It's broken. There's no doubt about that. First of all, it may have been flawed from the beginning in that we allowed, we're mandating individuals participate in a privatized system, in private insurance companies, healthcare systems. That being said, it definitely got the ball rolling. I mean, the conversation on who can and cannot get healthcare is an important one. Certainly our seniors and those of us who can't afford the extensive cost and care of modern healthcare need to be covered. They need to be covered. But right now, that's not working. I've got a good friend of mine who lives in DuCoin, who is an attorney, who told me that his healthcare options were such that he just couldn't afford it. That seems to me to be a bad system. So we need to reinvest in healthcare for our citizens, particularly in Southern Illinois. The Affordable Care Act was a good first step. It was a good first step, but it is not.
There's a lot of people that argue with you about what was a good first step.
Well, I think in,
because this is bashing people's brains.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt that the cost is ridiculous, and that Obamacare, as it's been called in Southern Illinois, is not working. But it has to be part of the conversation moving forward. We need to have the discussion about how we're going to pay for this. And prior to the passage of that bill, there were a lot of issues like pre-existing conditions that precluded folks from getting health care in any capacity. Now we need to move forward. We need to readdress a broken system.
Single payer?
I think it's worthy of conversation. I think that's something that we need to talk about.
But you take a government that could not run a bordello, Mustang Ranch, legal bordello. IRS takes it over, couldn't run it. Do you want them in charge of your health care?
Well, that's definitely a good point. But I think we've seen a system now that's not working at all. I mean, when we mandate...
But they're the same people who screwed that up. Of course it doesn't work. See, that's the kind of stuff that I'm hearing. When I'm out on the street, that's the one there. They're up in my grill in the popular metaphor about things like this. How can I continue to afford and take care of my kids? I can't afford health care. Once I paid so much for health care, I can't afford to go to the hospital anymore. And that's that nuts and bolts aspect. A lot of this, like the trade plans, that's esoteric to people who cannot get from one paycheck to the next. And that's your district.
You're right. And I've talked to healthcare providers who tell us things like, listen, it was well intended that, for example, people can participate in Medicare Plan B, but they've got $1,000 deductibles, $5,000 deductibles that frankly will never get paid. Now we're broken in two phases. We're not appropriately providing healthcare for our citizens, and healthcare providers aren't getting paid. That's written off debt that will never be paid back. There has to be another solution. And right now, mandating our participation in a privatized system is not working.
We talked about trade just a couple of moments ago and national defense and immigration. When you look at the polling, those are what people are talking about, and immigration is very high on the list.
Mm-hmm.
What's to be done when it comes to our district and your – I mean, how much of a priority is it? I mean, is it because of the district and who's coming into the district? Is it because of national security? Or would we better serve talking about our district when we talked about coal and jobs?
Well, frankly, when I talk to folks, I think the priority is the economy. You know, we talk to people on a regular and daily basis who say things like, I used to work in a coal mine and now I work at a gas station, and certainly that's a noble profession. I mean, going out to work and raise money to put food on your family's table,
right,
is noble, but they were making more money before. Their earning capacity was higher previously. That seems to me to be their biggest interest. Now, immigration is certainly one of them, and I think we really need to look into comprehensive.
Because of displaced employees, because I see this a lot,
I don't think in Southern Illinois we have as big of an issue with displaced employment because of immigration as we do that the economy is leaving us. You know, in 2014, a report was issued that suggested we lost up to 4,000 manufacturing jobs due to bad trade policy.
And you get a double whammy, because when you're talking about jobs in Illinois, you still have to deal with the state of. Trade Show Exhibition Services announced they're moving from Illinois to Indiana because fiscally, Indiana's a better fit.
You know, certainly we've got an issue at the state level, and it's something that I hear about running for a federal position.
Right.
But I think if Illinois could just take care of its own house, if they could just move past this partisan bickering, businesses might be more inclined to stick around. I mean, we're talking to some of our major employers, like, for example, Southern Illinois University, and telling them that we can't help them out with their budget. That's not good. That's not good. So I think the goal for a federal representative in that capacity, so when obviously if I were to win, I certainly wouldn't have direct influence on the vote over a budget, but we can still advocate. We can still sit down with members of both parties and say, listen, we've got to come to some sort of resolution here.
Right. And this is, which is kind of interesting because I never really thought about this until a couple of years back, and I was having a conversation with a congressman and saying, look, we need a strong, cohesive Illinois delegation in Washington.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. That's why my opponent's record of being partisan to the extreme is not beneficial for Southern Illinois. It precludes your ability to effectively talk to the folks that you have to go to work with. When you're a servant of the party, you have no capacity to reach across the aisle. You just can't do it. And so that's why I think that this is necessary, that we do need somebody who's an independent voice and an independent thinker for Southern Illinois, somebody who has life experiences. We can relate to things that the folks in Southern Illinois are going through and really work for progress.
Do you think when you talk specifically about you and what you hope to accomplish for the race, that what we've seen this year is a proxy battle, that everybody is a hand puppet for Hillary or a hand puppet for Trump, a hand puppet for Ron or a hand puppet for Madigan on the state level? Does that proxy war diminish the local aspect of politics?
So it's kind of a two-part question. First of all, I think one of the advantages of my candidacy is that we really haven't been a hand puppet, as you said, for either candidate. You know, when our candidacy started, we took some flack from the National Party for being, for example, pro-coal, and that we were advocates for the Second Amendment. You know, those were a lot of issues that we struggled with in terms of our conversations with the National Party. I think it's why our candidacy is an exceptional one. It's the appropriate one. That being said, partisan politics is certainly precluding things from getting done at a state and at a federal level. There's no doubt about that.
And big stuff too. I mean, if you want to just throw one out there, Florida and Zika.
That's right.
Right. All right. We can't agree on anything, so we have a disease that counts on you not doing anything, progressing along, and we come up with no agreement at all. I mean, we've seen this on a lot of different issues. Well, we're not going to agree on this because, well, there's an element in there that talks about Confederate
exactly.
flags and VA cemeteries. Well, what does that have to do with Zika?
Or how about, you know, things that 40 years ago were considered universally bipartisan, like infrastructure repair, our roads and our sewers and our bridges, things that we need to invest in order to promote the American economy, things that seem to me to be totally bipartisan. And we can no longer get those bills passed because we have become party hacks.
Well, this may be the last time you and I get to speak before November 7th.
Mm-hmm.
What would you want somebody to know in the briefest possible way? Though they walk into the booth on that Tuesday and they decide whose name they're going to pick there and put the mark by, what do they need to know about C.J. Barisevic?
Anybody that tells you they'll get elected and they're going to change the world the next day is lying to you. But what I can tell you is this. My candidacy represents a switch. It's a change from politics and business as usual. And this isn't a talking point. I mean, we can look at both candidacies. Mike Bost has been in office since the early 1990s. Hasn't done a whole lot. He is certainly good at getting elected. There's no doubt about that. And he's a good guy. But this candidacy, my candidacy, is different. It's about advocacy. It's about not only voting the right way, not voting for things like fast track, not voting to take country of origin off of our meat products, but advocacy. Going to people and places and businesses and saying, listen, this is why you need to come to Southern Illinois. I'm an independent voice, not beholden to a party or to a leader. I'm a speaker for Southern Illinois. That's what I look forward to, and I'm very, very excited about the opportunity.
All right, you're going to be making a couple of appearances today, but one thing before I let you go today, talk to me quickly about the people who have come to your campaign with endorsements.
We've had great endorsements. We've had endorsements from the laborers, the steel workers, which was a particularly flattering endorsement. You know, steel right now is under attack from all over the place.
U.S. Steel is.
Correct. And the steel mill in the district in Granite City was idled for a lot of different reasons. One of them was because of some of the votes that my opponent took.
And you can go right down, not far from that location, and you can find a water project where the steel pipes are setting at the side, made in China.
Exactly. It's embarrassing and insulting. And
literally, right down the road from the steel mill, we import steel pipe from China.
Exactly. And so those endorsements where they might be able to benefit immediately from endorsing an incumbent, but they know that the long-term future of their industry and the district is more important by endorsing the right candidate. Those are the kinds of endorsements that I've received, and those have been extremely flattering.
It's amazing how many problems go away when you have jobs.
You're exactly right. You know, when I talk to my parents about the problems of the district, and we're just sitting at their dinner table and having a conversation, my dad always says, and he's said it since I've been just a boy, the best welfare program on the planet is a job.
C.J. Barsevic, Democrat, 15th Congressional District.
12th.
12th, excuse me. I did 15th last week or something. Thanks. Anyway, by the way, 12th Congressional District. That's the seat currently held by Mike Bost. Yesterday you heard Paula Bradshaw. Today you heard the Democrat, and tomorrow Republican Mike Bost. CJ, first off, good to meet you in person.
Likewise.
Good luck today.
Thank you very much.
Barbecue. That's all I got to say to you.
You're right.
Barbecue before you leave, okay?
It's good.